The Story County Board of Commissioners meeting, and at this time we'll go ahead and recess as the Board of Commissioners and convene as the Story County Liquor Board. Moving along now to item number 30, discussion of possible action, second reading of ordinance number 15-271, amending Story County Code Chapter 5.12, sale of alcoholic beverages, and section 8.28.025, alcoholic beverages, to revise the procedure for issuing and revoking business and liquor licenses and providing for other properly related matters. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Robert Morris for the record. I was going to start by saying I plan to ask the board to continue this matter to a date certain, or at least continue the matter. There are enough issues, I think, that need work on that haven't really been developed that I think that the best course would be to continue it. However, there are some things that I think we could go ahead with today, and I would appreciate any discussion on some issues that I think the board is going to have to deal with before adopting this ordinance. Let me start out by saying that NRS makes this a complicated matter. They have a special section in NRS for liquor board ordinances, and that's why I broke these into two different ordinances, though the language in the liquor board ordinance, which we're talking about right now, which is the 5.12 chapter, it requires that the board do them as a separate item and that the clerk keep a separate book of liquor ordinances. Now, in my research of all the other jurisdictions in Nevada, nobody does that. And so we have the NRS saying that you should do this, which nobody's following. And so my attempt to meet the law is to break it into two separate ordinances, one dealing with liquor licenses, which would be approved by the liquor board, which is here today. I've also included that language in a general ordinance so that we can have the liquor ordinance in our code where people can find it instead of an obscure book in the clerk's office. So it's been complicated in a certain sense, but I think by putting them as two separate ordinances, we're meeting with the intent of the law. The other thing is, since this is a new process, we're getting rid of some of the problems, and one of them is that we have the same number for both the ordinances, and so I think that is going to cause a problem. So after talking with the clerk treasurer, Vanessa, we thought we might put an L in parentheses after the liquor board one. So the ordinance number would be 15-71 with a parentheses L, capital L after it. And that would signify that this is a liquor board ordinance as opposed to a regular ordinance for the board. So when I come back next time, I'll have that change in the liquor board ordinance. There are several issues that I wanted to deal with, and I thought I would just bring them up somewhat randomly. And so the first issue I was going to talk about was there is a section 5.12.100 where there is a fee for an additional bar on the same premises. And my understanding is that that's been a practice in the county, but it seems strange that that you would charge an extra fee for just having another bar in the same premises. And so I was thinking that that was something that the board might want to look at. It would streamline the process a little bit. It would take away some of the revenue. I believe that the license is $500. But I'm not sure how many entities have more than one bar in them.
And I can only think of two, one of which is not currently selling liquor.
The additional fee is only $50, I think.
I don't know. We can look it up.
To the best of my knowledge right now, there are none that have multiple licensed bars. There are a couple that have a main bar with a service bar attached to it, but not two bars in the same establishment.
I mean, that'd be like if you had a clothing store, if you had more than one cash register, that each cash register would have to have a license to sell clothing, right?
Right. And so there are details like that that it seems as though it would, I think, simplify it in the ordinance, not necessarily in practice if we don't have any in practice.
So it's going to be your recommendation that we eliminate the
yes.
double billing or triple billing, whatever it might be?
Does that pertain to service bars, too?
No, that doesn't.
Okay. And the difference, just so we're clear, between a second bar and a service bar is service bar are no patrons, just a place for the waitresses and whatnot to be able to serve drinks from, but not sit down, no anything.
Right. And so that's another thing that could be looked at, you know, as to whether that needs to have a separate license or not.
Yeah. Well, a service bar, I mean, even a patron can walk up to a service bar to get a...
No. By our definition, no. And I would probably say it's really the same thing. It's almost like having a bathroom warehouse and requiring a separate license.
Well, you could actually set up a service bar in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
So that your waiters don't have to go to the bar. They could take those drinks. If it's a restaurant, for example, if there's a bar and restaurant, they wouldn't have to go to the bar to get the drinks. They could just make them out of a service bar.
Yeah,
in the restaurant area.
And it would be staff's recommendation. And we did agendize this as an action item, I believe, so you can give us direction.
Uh-huh.
It would be staff's recommendation to go ahead and eliminate any additional fees for a second bar within the same facility or a service bar within the same facility. I again, can't think of that many service bars that we have. I'm kind of looking at the sheriff, but I don't know of any.
Nothing is coming to mind that it actually has an active service bar. There's been some discussion and some that were given the opportunity, and I can't think of any active ones right now.
Usually for special events, aren't they?
Right. No, that'll be different. We want to talk about that separately.
We would talk about that as well. And so my suggestion is if there's, I'll present the ideas. If there's no outright rejection, what I'll do is include them in the next time it'll come back with underlined language so you know that it's a change from the current one. And so there are many things. One of the other things that I was going to just bring up and is the certified training program. Larger counties over 100,000 are required to have these certified training programs where you train people in the sale of alcohol. Currently, it's not in the ordinance. If it's a jurisdiction under 100,000, the board has the opportunity to include that if they want. And so currently I do not have it included. If the board would like it included, you could tell me that that's something you're interested in.
From the sheriff's office, do you find problems with people being overserved or underage drinking?
By and large, it has not been a problem. We've brought training up here on a few occasions, and it was well received, but I think we'd be doing a disservice to those businesses, because sometimes they go through employees pretty quickly and they get kind of spending and having to run everybody through. And then you've also got restaurants that would have to go through that because they're serving alcohol and whatnot too. So I don't think we should include it.
Maybe we should look at just stand and pat until see what the legislature does, because you never know what those guys will do down there. They could force it upon us.
Okay.
And I would agree with the sheriff's recommendation. I think it's just added governance.
Yeah.
And in the item, I have, it's sort of a connected idea. There are two things. One is a special event for permit for alcoholic beverages, and that's at the very end of the section 8.25025. And it says the permit is good for a single event for 5 days. There is a question that I recall having talked about as to whether you could get a permit to cover more than one event. You know, if there is a, say, 12 events during the summer, could you come in and get a single permit for all 12 events instead of getting a single one for each as they came along? And so I would leave it up to the sheriff and others if that seems like a reasonable idea to be able to do multiple events under a single permit or not.
And again, I think if you wanted my recommendation, and I'd look to the sheriff, I don't think the existing licensed liquor holders in their applications for a special event, i.e. the Red Dog or the Washoe Club or the Pondo or any of those, I don't think these are big labor-intensive items. They have to meet the deadlines, send in an app. And then we being the county in general, but also the tourism authority, you know, has a decent idea as to who's going to be serving and who's not. Because there are events where we kind of need to regulate both the use of our barriers if they want to set up out in the fog lines, and also just in general the number of sales. So I would suggest we continue that practice.
I have any thoughts on that or not.
Okay.
It seems like, because I'm involved in it personally, too, with my business.
Right. And the fallback position is just to leave it the way it is, unless there's an interest to change it.
I mean, monetarily, it's negligible because it's only a $10 fee. It probably costs the sheriff's office more than that to process it, so...
For his staff, but I would agree. And for tracking purposes, not all of the people participate in every event. So
right.
Yeah. And the thing is that
Marshall may do every single holiday event that comes up, whereas you know, the Washoe Club may only do three a year. So right. For tracking purposes, it'd be better to just leave it the way it is.
Okay. That sounds
and
good.
And what we do want people who are going to participate in special events to have a liquor license to start with. We don't want just anybody setting up shop.
That's an easy process, I think. And then, if I heard you right, you want us to raise that fee to cover our costs. Is that correct?
No, that's not what I said.
And so there are two other issues, and I think Pat has addressed them very well in a memorandum that he has sent out. And basically, if I can paraphrase... The current ordinance requires a certain financial standing before you can get a liquor license. And so the issue is basically, does the county want to continue using financial standing as a qualification for a license? We've talked about, Mr. Whitten and I have talked about good moral character, which is required in Clark County. There's language that I've read of being of a suitable character for Las Vegas. I would say the majority of jurisdictions do not have financial standing as a requirement for a liquor license. Say in Las Vegas, they do have a requirement, but it's, I think the qualification is you have to be a certain size before you end up having to give financial information about your business. And so that's one of the things that struck me. If you have a mom and pop corner liquor store, you don't really need to have a full-blown financial analysis as to say somebody that's going to open a casino and have many bars and sell a lot of alcohol. I think that would be a distinction that maybe I haven't actually put it into the code, but it was an idea that I thought I would address the board, that if we do want to use financial standing, we might want to put certain hurdles that, as far as size or employees, square footage employees, to require that you do a financial standing part of the application. And so I throw that out. If you have any ideas about it, I'd be interested in hearing.
If I could speak to that, when Bob brought up the good moral character, it begs the question, how do we define that? Because, in my talks with the sheriff, we've always talked about you can't just have arbitrary standards out there, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to define the areas in which good moral character might necessarily touch in. So we suggested, for instance, creditworthiness. That could be defined pretty well in the credit report that we require that they would give us that is dated no older than 60 days. Still, their financial standing or probity, because I think that's important, but I think it's a sliding scale, and I'll give you an example in a minute. Criminal history, which we actually don't have in our ordinance right now. You could have a organized crime guy come in, and as long as he had a strong balance sheet and tax returns, he'd probably be able to do it. But criminal history, character references, background history, and other information that we may be able to come across. The reason why I like that is I think then we're looking at the bigger picture. And to give you an example, what I think, where I'm trying to go and where I try to go in that email, was that we're, if you take, I'm not picking on Lance because he's not here, but if you take the bar out of the brothel, that's a whole different animal than the Washoe Club or the Silver Dollar Pub. It's just scale. And I'm not saying because it's in the brothel. I'm saying just the volume of people that are there, those type of things. And if we put the burden on, say, the Washoe Club to give us a financial statement, that's a pretty big burden to dump on somebody, especially if you begin to require it to be at least CPA prepared, if not CPA reviewed. And a handwritten financial statement isn't what the paper's written on. So I would tell you, I think if we go down this path, we definitely want to tier it based on some parameters, be it, as Bob mentioned, the number of employees, the number of square feet. You could get crazy and do the number of bar stools if you really wanted to, but something like that. And we don't want to base it on revenue. We've avoided that for ages.
Well, this kind of gets into where some of my concerns were, and again, going back to how much governance is that's necessary. Just looking at people in the past who have been here, and by the time they open the doors, they've got two nickels left in their pocket if they're lucky, but they've made a go of it. Whereas we've had others who've had good balance sheets, and they haven't made a go of it. I mean, it's capitalistic society, the American way. If you've got a dime in your pocket, you can turn it into a dollar as long as you're doing it through legal means. Why should government stand in your way? What constitutes creditworthiness? Now, having lots of assets, having lots of money in the bank, or just having a good business sense, I think we should take financial standing out of it altogether. I agree. We don't want organized crime getting into here, things like that, even on a tiered level. I don't know if that's necessary because most of our businesses are a mom-and-pop type of an operation. I consider the bucket a mom-and-pop operation. But the bigger they are, the more oversight you're going to get anyway because, as Pat points out, and you've got with Lance, he's got the brothel. There's additional oversights because of that brothel. If somebody comes in and builds a 500-machine casino down on the park or something, gaming's going to be all over that, like white on rice. So why are we needing to reinvent the wheel for the liquor aspect of it? You know, what we're looking at, even with a place the size of the bucket, you know, you've got gaming in there, so you've got additional oversights. We've never held a real hard, strict standard for a bar license, at least in the 10 years I've been here, and I don't. And as long as they're not a criminal element, they're not bringing in criminality, God bless the American way.
And anywhere that there's gaming, there's going to be strict oversight, right. Even with a restricted license.
Right.
You know, someone who's going to have 15 or fewer machines, they're still going to go through gaming scrutiny.
Right.
So.
I would agree certainly with what the sheriff has said relative to we never have. You know, I think, you know, going through our recent issues, which I'll acknowledge we're still in litigation on, you know, I think we've learned that we at least have to look at this and consider these things and, you know, potentially restructure. And I appreciate non-over-governance. I've said it myself and I believe it, probably to the same extent that I think everybody up here does. But I would also advocate, particularly for the larger operations, if we can define what larger is, this is a one-time shot. We're not going to require them to give us financial statements, tax returns, and everything every year. We want to know going in before we give you that initial established license, who are you? I guess that's it. I mean, I think creditworthiness, quite frankly, is a pretty simple, here's my credit report. You know, I ran it from the three credit bureaus or whatever I've done. We could base it on credit score if you really wanted to, but, you know, and there are subjective factors. That's where the sheriff and I probably will always disagree. I'm sure he would like it as objective as he can, and we can make it, and I don't disagree with that. But in all candidness, I've given large unsecured loans to people with bankruptcies before, as I've said in these meetings, because there were mitigating circumstances. You know, the loss of a job after 20 years and now I'm back on my feet after 5, or the catastrophic illness of a child or something like that. There are reasons and there is subjectivity, and I don't think you can dial that out of the process. And I think not requiring anything is not wise, in my opinion. I think we ought to set some guidelines, and then we ought to provide you the results of this information, probably on a better basis than we did, and that's not a hit of anybody. I've never did it with prior commissions. When I did the backgrounding, I know Jim Miller did it, so it's a continuation. But I think as the liquor board is making decisions, the liquor board needs to know who we're licensing on these privileged licenses.
But there is a provision for felons, basically. I remember, a felony or any crime which...
Yeah, we've got...
Which under laws in Nevada could be a felony. Could we also consider any pending litigation? You know what I mean? Like, maybe Mr. Bartender has a case against him that could be a felony.
Okay.
Criminal case. Would that be grounds to hold off until that's, you know? stuff like that. I'm just asking. I'm throwing my thoughts out there.
And we can certainly kick that around. My worries there are, and I think our legal counsel will tell us, and I'm sure our sheriff too, they're innocent until they're proven guilty. So a conviction is exactly that. They're guilty, and a pending litigation is an accusation, I guess, if you will.
Well, I like your example of someone who maybe filed bankruptcy, but now they've got their feet on the ground, they're moving forward, they're doing a good job. But if you do a financial background, and a person has a continuing reputation of not paying their bills or changing locations every time the rent comes due or something like that, if that's what their track record is, that's not somebody we want to go ahead, because they're going to do the same thing here. That's not somebody we want to license. Somebody who's got the reputation and is backed up by their financial background, that's what their reputation is. That's their MO, is that they don't pay their bills. They just let the bills stack up, and then they change locations. And then they let the bills stack up, and they change locations. So.
And I'm not in business to protect the liquor suppliers, but I'm sure they'd appreciate some level of scrutiny before the county endorsed an operation to at least know they're likely to get their bills paid. I mean, we know there's COD customers out there right now. I'm going to ask if we can move that microphone closer to Ann. They're not picking up the sheriff on the audio track.
Yeah, and just to be devil's advocate, but it's not hypothetical. If that's what we're looking at, you know, maybe we need to scope that out and define it better, because, and without naming names, we have people who are licensed who they occasionally have a hard time paying their bills. And, you know, doesn't make them bad business people, just maybe bad circumstances, something going on. But how do you factor that in? I mean, we've got a business here in town who, they couldn't afford to pay attention when they opened the doors, but they're very successful, and from what I see in here, there's not been a bit of problems, where we have one that's been here for quite some time, and they struggle from year to year, both of them are successful businesses, just handling it in a different way. We're going to look at that, and I appreciate somebody can have a bad time, they file bankruptcy, and we're going to look at subjectiveness, but, it's maybe that's their way out, is they come up with a loan from somebody, and they're going to open this grand bar and get things going, and now we're going to tell them, well, now we don't think you're worthy of it.
Yeah, I guess my argument coming back is we're not changing the rules for anybody that's here. We're only looking at initial licensing, and for those that have struggled, we gave our best shot in terms of knowing who they are before we gave them a privileged license. I mean, these aren't your run-of-the-mill business licenses. We had an interesting issue with a company that I've mentioned publicly that was doing business at the industrial park without licensing from the county or the state, and they went and finally corrected that, and we actually asked for counsel to give us an opinion as to whether or not we could decline it, because our experiences with them were pretty serious at the time. The answer was no, these are general licenses, and that's fine. That's what we expected, but, we got a good answer out of it. On these liquor licenses and many of these others, these are privileged licenses. I think we should know who we are licensing to the greatest extent we can.
I think the reputation of that person plays into this. And the reputation would be, guy doesn't pay his bills, then he's not reputable. He shouldn't be in that type of business, But, like I said, it's a privileged license. Just like gaming's a privileged license, If you don't play ball with those guys correctly, you don't get a license.
A driver's license is a privileged license.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and again, we can certainly kick this around. We want to do it right. That's why Bob's asked for at least a second reading, and maybe even a third second reading.
Right.
Who knows? But we, I think we have to keep our eye on the fact that they are privileged. And honestly, I may have misspoke a minute ago when I said we're not going to change the rules on somebody. But I would probably argue, I guess, depending on the strength of the ordinance wording, that, you know, if we have that flake that went off the deep end and was not paying anybody cash, you know, since they are privileged licenses, perhaps we could go through the show cause, you know, of saying, you know, we've got to have a new credit report. We've got to have some things. I don't know. I don't know if that's what we want to do or not. But, you know, the sheriff's right. Good people turn bad and marginal people turn great as far as financial strength, usually. I mean, I can look at a credit report. You can look at a credit report. And we know, you know, if they've got a trail, like the chairman's mentioned, of 90-day delinquencies, collections, charge-offs, you know, they're probably not going to be a good gamble for, you know, for doing business in the county. And then not to segue away from this, because that's what exactly what I know Bob and Ann and I were hoping we could generate healthy conversations. But I think the other question that we really need guidance on that I think is listed in Bob's write-up, not mine, is who do you want to do the processing? You know, how do you want this? I mean, I brought my prompt just to explain it to Fork. You know, we use Dean's office through Stacy. That's why she's here. You know, it's kind of the processor, the one point of sale service, which I'm a huge advocate of. And again, not to diminish the importance or the professionalism of the sheriff's office, but we, you know, Stacy's office probably, or Dean's office, the licensing division, probably processes between 200 and 500 licenses. I would say closer to 500 licenses compared to every new liquor license that we have. And it probably is even higher than that. I'm trying to be conservative on my number. And years ago under Sheriff Miller, we made a judgment error, I think, in my opinion, before the sheriff's office just looked at the liquor licensing and the cabaret and anything else that was privileged or required backgrounding or any level of scrutiny. And then the business building department did everything else. And we're, you know, I'm an advocate of going back to the one-stop shop concept. We've given you a workflow where anything to do with probably the creditworthiness and financial strength would go to the comptroller. We're working diligently through a very tedious process with the state repository as to how an agency other than our sheriff's office can access and use information in the state and federal criminal databases. I think with the, you know, with the recent inception of, you know, a director of security, you know, who was a trained investigator, it doesn't matter if she leaves, I'd be looking for somebody else of the same skill sets. I think we've got the mechanism in place. We can do it. We have to get it done right with the state, but they've been phenomenal to work with. And then, quite frankly, we've got one more. We've got four members of the Liquor Licensing Board that can impartially look at a full package. They can look at the credit report. They can look at the criminal history. They can look at whatever it is that you want to look for. The state's working with us on disclaimers that, you know, if there's information in the criminal history report that you look at, it's confidential until such point as it's potentially denied. And I forget if there's an appeal of the denial or if the denial is contested or something like that, then they waive upfront knowledge that that information can be made public. So I'm an advocate for no reason and not taking it away from the sheriff's department, but to putting it all in. I've worked with Stacy on this ordinance for quite a while now. Again, most of the burden on this ordinance will truly come on the new licenses. Otherwise, for the most part, it's just another license to issue. And that is what I'm advocating for those reasons.
And
well, I like it. I like your idea because it's, like you said, it's a one-stop shop, and that's a department that can actually take time to direct them where they have to go next or what's going to happen. Whereas the sheriff's department really isn't in that mode, I don't believe.
Well, certainly not.
They got to go see the building department, or they got to go see the fire department and all these other departments. It's part of the process. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we have food establishments right now that do not have the food trucks in particular, but others that, you know, again, have state health, as will every bar.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, Stacy knows, she has different sheets, different packages that she actually gave me that were a basis for the workflow. But she knows, here's your checklist. You got to get a hold of either Paul Cohen if you're out in the River District or whoever it is up here. And I'm not saying the Sheriff's Department can't do that. You know, and they may be doing it. I know we missed one. One doesn't count. You know, it's a touching one. But I think, again, it's just putting the processing, you know, with a group that just does it all the time. And it creates, very honestly, something that I work hard with Bob on. We did not want another department. But within that department, you know, if you think about it, we've got an awful lot of functions that community development does. Nuisances, those types of things. So Bob is structured in such a way to be compliant with the state law that we would have a licensing division within community development as well.
And that's one thing I think I pointed out last time was that the NRS does make the sheriff the ex officio licensing authority in the county unless the county it takes time to do an ordinance creating a licensing division or department. And so that's part of the business license section that actually creates that licensing division. But again, as Mr. Whitten pointed out, are we going to have liquor licenses still go to the sheriff, or should that be more appropriately in the licensing division? And one of the things that I did in preparation with this was to meet with the state to see how it was possible for sort of civilian side of the county to go ahead and use the CHRI for fingerprinting. And so there is a procedure that is set up that the county can have prospective applicants go to these businesses that do live scan fingerprints and get the live scan done. It's sent automatically to the repository. The thing that the Department of Public Safety asked about was to make sure that the specific language that they wanted was in the ordinance, and that's one of the things I discovered, that there are six or seven ordinances that were done in I believe 2008 or 2006, where they inserted the appropriate language for the use of this fingerprint through the repository in all the various code sections. And one of the things is that uses the sheriff as the person to do it. We would have to go through, and if we decided to change that to, or at least change those that we wanted to change, if we wanted to leave some with the sheriff, such as work cards or some of the other things, we could do that. Say the brothel ordinance has the sheriff doing it currently. But if we wanted the licensing division to be able to do that, it is legally possible to have fingerprints run by the licensing division. And there are certain requirements on it, but I think that we can meet those requirements quite easily. So that's sort of the overview of the issues, and I think the thing that would be interesting to get, if you're ready to talk about it, is what do you think about creating this licensing division and moving some of the sheriff's duties as the ex officio licensing department to the one that's being created. Does that sound like an appropriate thing to do?
Isn't it already created?
Yes. Well, it is.
In a functional way, yes, but in a probably a technical way, no. I mean, our ordinances right now say, for general business licenses, and Ann and I actually talked about this. You know, sometimes things change. I mean, we changed nuisance officers so many times that I think you finally decided on nuisance that it was going to be the county manager's designee or the board's designee. That gives you guys a choice, too. I doubt we make this change again, once, you know, but I'm not going to say ever because you never say that. But I would tell you what Bob's doing is kind of a multi-cleanup and establishing a legal name for a work group that is doing what they're doing, and now we'd be adding more. It's fortunate that the liquor license actually makes us do something like that.
Right, and so the county did pass an ordinance creating the job of administrator that was to do the licensing, the business licensing, but they didn't actually create a division and put in the requirements that NRS requires. So this is a little cleanup where the suggested language does create a licensing division and gives them the appropriate authority and procedures in the ordinance to go forward. So unless something changes, there's going to be a licensing division if the ordinance is approved.
Okay.
Well, if I may, on the process, I've never, and I've said all along, I don't care if my office is doing it or not, but you use the example of a fork, I'd hold up the example of a knife the way it is right now. I mean, with what is being proposed and this being done by this person, this being done by this person, this being done by this person. And yeah, you have a fork. You have all these different people. But it comes to one place, whereas with the sheriff's office right now, it's much cleaner. It's much straight up and down. And as far as the criminal history information, the end result is still the same. And we still have to come up with what is a disqualifier, what is not a disqualifier, short of having an applicant provide their criminal history to this board with them making it public. We, as a governmental entity, cannot make information public on the civil side. Now, they can come up and they say, here's my criminal history, I did this, 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 and this. But as a governmental entity, the disclosure of that is a violation. So your end result on the criminal history, there's lots of workarounds, and in the letter, the email that I sent, Pat, to you and to Bob, and I believe Ann got a copy of it, and there were multiple options on how that could be addressed, regardless of where we go on this. You know, you're right, there's not enough licensing issues that go on. I don't think it'd make a hill of beans to Stacy and their operation. It doesn't make a hill of beans to us one way or the other. I think it becomes much more complicated, much more moving parts. Now, maybe those are moving parts behind the scenes, but because of the different things, depending on what it is we're going to require from an applicant, it becomes much more problematic for the building department to make all those pieces come together, because you have Hugh looking at something, you have Stacy doing something, you have the security director or private investigator doing something, you have the applicant providing information that may change. So, I mean, you have many more moving parts behind the scenes, whereas with the sheriff's office, you've got basically one person that's going to say X, Y, Z, and it's a much cleaner and more efficient process in my mind. And then as far as your comment on the liquor board and their impartiality, I don't see the reports until they're done anyway, so I have no position one way or another, basically until the same time everybody else sees whatever it is that it's going to be seen.
Well, I would take some exception to the last thing, because they've not seen them. At least they didn't see them.
Well, I understand that, but that's part of what's brought us to this point, is because some of those disclosure issues that are legal disclosures, and that we've not made, which has allowed us to dodge a bullet. So, and that's part of what this is cleaning things up. I mean, what do you see from the building department on the general business licenses? You see a name on a piece of paper and a recommendation of thumbs up or thumbs down. And that's part of what I had in the email that I had sent out to everybody is, you know, we have to, short of disclosing all of somebody's background, and we have to determine what's going to be proper, what's going to not be proper. And as you indicated, when you were the one responsible for it, you probably did just like everybody else. You came up, Joe Blow wants a license, Joe Blow's good to go. And that was the end of it. But that was based on your understanding of what the commission wanted to see as far as what constituted a qualified applicant. Now, and yes, we probably should formalize that more so there's more guidelines or whatever, but and the end result is still going to be pretty much the same thing, is it not?
Well, you know, again, not to want to sink into the weeds because you're not either, and I'm not inclined to. A couple things. First off, you're absolutely right on general licenses. We're talking about privileged licenses. I'm not, you know, there's a whole world of difference, and we've got a legal opinion backing that up that says you can probably have one of the biggest flakes around, and yeah, they get a license as long as they're living, breathing, and have followed your general criteria. As far as criminal and background histories, I do not question the proficiency of the sheriff's department, period. That's not in question. Trying to be as polite and as kind as I can, I think particularly if we are going to tier and look at complex, large businesses with some level of interest into what their creditworthiness and financial standards are, I would have to pause and at least question the credentials of anybody working for you as opposed to our fiscal manager, our comptroller. And to be real blunt about the added steps, the customer will probably never see anything, or the applicant. And this is the type of stuff that licensing division, such as it is right now, is used to all the time. They don't give you, even back to your general license example, they don't give the commission anymore a general license example until the no fire district has signed off from life and safety code. They know the building department has signed off. And in the cases like we're talking about here, they know state health has signed off, and it gets more complex with fire marshals and a whole bunch of other stuff. But that's stuff they do all the time. So we're adding two skilled, talented individuals, one of which has no more nor no less, I would advocate, talent than your investigators do, and the other one that has every bit as much and probably more on the financial credit worthiness standing of who our privileged applicant licenses might be issued to.
Well, I just wanted to make sure the board understood this issue. When we come back next time, maybe we can resolve it one way or the other.
Well, I think what I've asked for is like what we've asked for before, and we do get from you guys, is think about it and give me some direction. Share it with Bob and I, all of you. You know, Sheriff, you too. You know, this is the liquor licensing board. But, you know, what I see us doing from the customer standpoint is not only neutral, but probably even a positive in that they're going to leave Stacy or Sarah, and they're going to know exactly what they're doing. They may know that the comptroller is going to call them to ask them a question about numbers on the financial statement, that the security director is going to call them to set up a background interview exactly the same as you do now. So it's really not that much different, and it is, I think, better for the applicants.
Currently have 1,500 licenses. I think the sheriff's office runs about
75 to 80. Okay, and again, I'm going to repeat those numbers so the microphones pick them up for the recordings, but, you know, the current estimate for community development licensing division is about 1,500, and the guess is about 75 to 80 on, you know, on the privileged licenses. So, you know, the number, or you would have access to the numbers, and I think we're speculating on that one, but we track the other ones very closely. And we do things that I think are going to be probably helpful to the big picture. For instance, I wish Lance was here for this, even though he couldn't. He could weigh in on this, but no, he wouldn't. But the bottom line is, you know, Stacy and Sarah meticulously track the number of full-time equivalent employees, and we're constantly using that out there. We're using it to our advantage to refute this. You guys are creating thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of jobs, and Washoe County School District gets all the burden. Well, Stacy knows that there's 4,670 full-time equivalents, and that number's updated with every new licensee, and I'd be willing to bet you on the privilege that we have out there, i.e. the liquor We don't keep track because we have two different departments now, and one office and one department. Excuse me. Granted, we've never asked for it. We could, you know, I'll certainly stipulate to that. But I think overall the efficiencies, just by the volume, by the experience, by the knowledge, I think this is a good opportunity to do this. So. But we'd like your feedback.
I'm kind of changing gears here a little bit, but we're looking for reasons to deny, and I don't know the legality of it, but I was thinking on your 5.12.055 down there, you list you have a list of four items there. Maybe a history of alcohol abuse, say DUIs, because those are public record too. Selling to minors, stuff like that. You wouldn't want to give a liquor license to somebody who's selling to kids. And I don't know if you want to make that a five-year thing or a life thing. But that was just something to throw in there to think about.
That's great input. Because, I mean, I have to tell you, we've been, our nose and our eyes have been so close to this for 6 months or however long it's been, probably longer than that. So I think sometimes you miss the forest for the trees. So if you've got other stuff like that, we're starving for it. You know, again, from all of you, I'm going to follow up with Lance when he's available. So we want the same thing. You know, apply this. He's got two liquor licenses. You know, apply it to yours and tell us what you think.
Well, if you'd like to move on to business licenses, I'd ask for a motion to continue this.
Yeah. There's some trickiness in when we might schedule the liquor for second approval. And Bob, maybe you can speak to it better than me about trying to make sure our ducks are lined up with the repository for if we were to go with the business license division processing liquor licenses. I mean, we don't want to have you guys enact an ordinance that's effective 15 days later and us still not to have all the T's crossed and I's dotted on what we have to give.
Right, and so I originally asked for a date certain, but as long as it's okay to expect to have to publicize the next hearing, I would just ask that it be continued to a time that we can bring it back.
Okay, and that would be the right thing to do. I would to give you a reason.
So no specific date.
No, to give you a reasonable time frame. I mean, it's possible it could be within 30 days, but probably closer to 45 to 60.
I think so.
The state has been very good to work with, very helpful.
I missed part of your conversation there.
Okay, we're proposing to not continue it to a date specific, but just to continue it. We think we can hopefully maybe it could be back for second reading, publication and second reading in as soon as 30 days, but more realistically probably 45 to 60 while we work through the state and make sure that every word in our ordinance meets both theirs and the federal requirements as far as access and use to their information.
This is the second reading, but we're going to continue it, so it's not really the second reading.
Yeah, Bob seems to like seconds and third seconds. Yeah, I do want to point out a miracle. I've worked with Bob for probably 4 years now, and every draft I give him, he changes my capital letters to lowercase letters.
A big fight before.
And I heard him say, and I'm going to get a copy of the recording, that we're going to number this ordinance as 15-271 capital L. First time I've heard him use the word capital.
Well, he's cut off from working from now until the end of the budget cycle. So 60 days, the 45 to 60 days is probably a good amount from the DA's office and our budgetary restraints.
Can I get a motion to continue this item?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to continue the second reading of the Liquor Board Ordinance number 15-271.
To a time within maybe 40 to 60 days, 45 to 60 days. I'll second your motion. It's been moved to second to continue ordinance 15-271 for another second reading sometime in the near future. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Can you get that out of you?
Sure. I did. And I actually seconded it before you seconded it. So okay. Second time.
Thank you, Popeye.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Aye, aye.
Okay. Motion carries unanimously. Very good. At this time, we're going to adjourn as the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of Commissioners. Let's begin now at item 31, discussion of possible action, second reading of ordinance number 15-271. Would you like us to go through the same motion on this, too?
Yes, I would be recommending that this be continued as well. I was going to say, if it's okay with the chairman, I'll go through just some of the issues that I thought would be important to discuss. Again, the first one was the creation of the licensing division, and technically this is sort of cleanup. It's just to make sure that we follow all the legal requirements to create the division. Stacy has been great to work with, helping figure out exactly how it's going to work. And again, Mr. Witten has provided a workflow chart that I think gives you a good idea as to how we see it working. Again, there's some things that I just wanted to point out. NRS allows the county by ordinance to use civil penalties instead of the misdemeanor that exists currently. Some jurisdictions have fines. I believe it's Reno that uses a $100 fine for the first violation, $200 for the second, $500 for the third. But they actually have an ordinance in place that sets out the civil penalties. Again, that's something that NRS provides you the opportunity to use if you want to. Currently, it is not in the ordinance, and so we don't have that. If there is an interest in it, I could draft the language. Otherwise, it would stay the same.
Is it the court that imposed the fine?
It would be the court that imposed the fine under the misdemeanor.
And the reason why I like this
is we've said all along, and I appreciate Bob and Ham's flexibility with me. Sometimes you need that criminal path, I guess, but oftentimes you don't.
Right.
You know, the reference that I made to the company that, you know, had gone sideways without any licensing in Nevada, us, the state, anybody, also lied to us, lied to the overall contractor. They paid the price for it. I want to say they paid $30,000+ to the fire department for, you know, civil sanctions. So there is an element there that we cannot make criminals out of people that I don't think really are criminals.
So can this go either way? It can go criminal or it can go civil?
Not currently.
No.
You would have to direct us to go ahead and draft the language for civil penalties.
But it could go either way if you approve that.
Right.
I think given a good example of this. I think it's dog complaints or something? I mean, you know, she's effectively used the civil persuasion process, and when that isn't working, she's got the criminal process in her pocket.
Okay, so this legal counsel's recommendation.
Well, I guess from what Pat says, you don't want to make a criminal. You don't want to make somebody a criminal unless they start acting like a criminal.
Okay, so it's your recommendation that we would go, we would go ahead and come up with an ordinance to impose some type of civil sanctions in this.
Civil, and then if it doesn't work, because sometimes people. You put in a civil sanction, they don't follow through with that. It's like the type of person that you're talking about that, you know, possibly isn't paying their bills or just not paying attention. But when you have the criminal element, not the person, but the aspect of, you know, being charged criminally, it doesn't mean you're going to jail. That doesn't even mean that you're going to have a record. that means that you're going to go before a judge, that you could, you know, get even possibly your sentence suspended while you do certain things that you're supposed to follow through with. So I think that there's a lot of different ways to handle this. Like one of the ones that we had, and I don't want to mention any names, and maybe because of the actual fact pattern you guys would recognize it, so I'll do it. There was a situation where a person did not have a license, and they were doing something that was actually seen on TV. So that person actually ended up in the criminal arena through the contractors board, because they were the ones that filed something. But at the end of the day, everything was taken care of. Everything was corrected. Everything was handled. So I think sometimes it's better, depending on what you're looking at as the outcome, to have different avenues to get to the result that you want. And without a fact pattern that we're talking about specifically, that would be my general idea of why you'd want, you know, civil and criminal instead of limiting yourself. Because the one thing I've noticed about, and I love about Bob, like Pat's saying, is that when you change these ordinances, the last time we've had these ordinances changed is probably, what, 10, 15 years, 20 years? And so we're really trying to get all these ordinances updated, but you're thinking about today to the next 15, 20 years. So you want to be really thoughtful, which I think everybody is doing in this process. And it's not something that a lot of people have been involved in for years. So I think that the process that you guys are taking, I think the thoughtfulness that you're putting into these things, and they really are, like Pat was saying with Jack, that he's, you know, bringing in a new aspect that maybe hadn't been thought of because these guys have been working on it so much. So it's all up to you, but, you know, the thing that you want to look at are the consequences, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, because that's probably the next time these things will be changed.
And to give you an example, you know, I've got to reach way back in my history here. And I don't know if we've actually changed the dog complaint ordinance yet or not. I don't remember if we have, but we need right. to if this is the case. In the past, under prior DAs and prior district court judges, preceding former Justice McGuffey, to be clear on the record, we had a judge that didn't want to hear it, didn't want to be bothered with dog complaints, barking dogs, anything. I'm tired of it. I don't want to hear it. So therefore, we had a DA that wouldn't prosecute, you know, wouldn't do anything because they were getting slapped upside the head by the judge. Well, if you only have criminal penalties like we currently do, if we ever revert to those bad days again with either of those players, then we're up a creek without a paddle in some respects. And this gives us other options. And like I said, I've watched Stan masterfully use the criminal civil to get it solved, which is what it's all about in the first one.
Okay, the next subject is I made a change in the ordinance at 5.04.30, which just requires a single hearing for business licenses. Liquor licenses require two hearings, but there's no legal requirement that you do two hearings for business licenses. I just think that was the way that it had been done here, and I don't really think the board needs to see items twice. And so the new ordinance would have a single hearing for approval suffice for the public hearing on it.
And we took an interim step. First off, I want to point out, we've seen it where licensing division approves the licenses.
Right.
We've seen it with one reading, and obviously we have two. We would propose the one reading, but also with a modification of Stacy's currently put into play, even with two readings, is you'll never see a second reading until all the ducks are lined up, the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted, that health department signed off if applicable, building department, fire department, all that stuff. And we really want to streamline your time on these general licenses. So we'd be an advocate of the
single reading. You'll never see it once this is in effect. It would never be on the consent agenda again. It actually streamlines time for staff. She doesn't have to do two submittal letters. It streamlines time for the clerk's office, who doesn't have to list 57, you know, twice. So we would advocate for that single reading with the understanding that Stacy's holding back even on that second reading until they are good to go.
Sounds good.
The next item, I would just point out that we haven't suggested any increased fees. And what I did, we had some discussion between Mr. Witten and myself about doing a resolution for fees. Many counties I know have a yearly review of fees that they apply by resolution by the board, and it gives the county the ability to have a single document with all the fees in it. What I've done is I've left the fees in the ordinance itself and said that if the board decides to set the fees by resolution, it can set up the second or the resolution outside of the ordinance. And one of the things is if you change fees on a regular basis, you would have to change the ordinance every time. That's why a resolution would be easier. But at this point in time, I don't see pulling everything out for a resolution at this point. I think we'll just keep the existing fees that we have in there. And at the time that the county decides to go ahead with a fee resolution for countywide fees, we can move them over.
Do we have to reopen the ordinance, though, again to do that?
I mean, we would, yes.
And I would advocate to make the decision now. I mean, first off, just so you guys are clear, we don't want to raise fees. Okay? We're pretty happy with most every one of our fees, from what I hear and see. But you never know if you want to change something. And changing through the ordinance is time-consuming and expensive. So I would be an advocate of removing them now, going ahead and concurrently having a resolution that matches our existing fee schedule. And then subsequent to that, probably not even once a year. I mean, we haven't raised these fees since the same period of time that I think Marshall referenced or somebody referenced, you know, 2000. Yeah. I don't see us raising them in the near future, to be honest with you. We're in the market, unless we're Douglas County where we don't have business licenses.
Right. If I might add, Stacy Buchanan, for the record, the only thing we've ever considered is breaking out the square footage for the larger. I think when these fees were implemented, we never thought we'd have 500,000 square foot buildings, when now we have an abundance of 800,000 and 900,000 square foot buildings. I think that's the only thing.
Well, those come under the general business licenses.
They
square
do.
Footage.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. We would take the fees out of the ordinance, including square footage, and we would move them into resolution.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, I got you.
But with no anticipated changes on the horizon, other than maybe Stacy's down the road.
I know I have a neighbor in the Highlands who's working on trying to start a tattoo business. What category would that fall under? Would that be a general license?
That's not.
Or independent
legal
contract?
In store.
We don't currently provide for those.
Right.
And the problem, Commissioner McGuffey, is, and again, it's really odd when you do like what Bob's done and Stacy does, which is go out and compare other jurisdictions. Some of these guys have no health concerns at all with their tattoo parlors. It's just say, here's your license, knock yourself out. We had approached Carson City Health one time and asked if we could enter into a memorandum of understanding so that they might be able to health inspect and we could provide. That'll probably be a reopening of this ordinance. I mean, in the meantime, our stance is right now we don't have a provision for them, so they aren't allowed. You get into
that. Must not be aware of this.
Huh?
You must not be aware of that.
Yeah, he probably should call us.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, how close do you want them to the schools? You know, what are your governances? And there's a lot of good models out there, but there's a lot of lousy models too. So it's not that we're against it. We're against some of everything out of Tribe. I mean, Christ, we're going to have a daycare, fast foods,
You name it, I could just see a tattoo parlor coming up too.
But that's acceptable in Tri, just not.
It's not acceptable in the city. Right? Countywide ordinances do not provide for a tattoo parlor. So.
Countywide.
He is aware of that.
Is he?
Oh, okay.
So to move on,
if you want us to consider them, again, this is the kind of input we need. That's why I think Bob's done a great job of saying the second reading. You know, we really want to try to get this right so we don't have to look at it for 10 or 15 years. So, if you want us to provide for tattoo parlors, we can start researching. We got 30 to 45 days to do it, and see if he's got nothing else to do.
Divorce.
You know, but go back. Why did we push forward this a long time ago? It's because do we want the main corridor of the business district of Virginia City to look like downtown Reno, with you know pawn shops, tattoo parlors, T-shirt shops, all the stuff that seemed to attract the undesirable element to a community? I mean, we've only allowed in this community one. Fortune telling license too. That's a privileged license as well. Only one.
Hmm.
So.
And we charge more.
They'll have to get a fake bucket of blood tattoo. Huh?
That's right.
and there are workarounds to what Commissioner McBride's proposing, and I agree with that. By the way, our brothel ordinance is pretty simple. You have to do this in our adult shows, our topless. You have to do it inside a permitted brothel, and brothels aren't permitted in the historic district. So
there's been a few.
Huh?
There, never mind.
Well, I'm not responsible for street bumps. But, you know, I mean, there are ways we could, you know, and I think the best person to ask would be Lance himself, is, do you want tattoo parlors out there? And I could guess Lance's answer, but... You know, then we can take a look, and if you guys want us to look at it, that's why we want. We knew this was going to take a long time today, because we really wanted to kick it around as much as we could.
I want to know how many more questions Bob has for you.
And actually, I can make them non-questions. I could just report on some of the stuff, and it's just to sort of reiterate why we need to change the ordinance, and one of them is the NRS requirement for industrial insurance for workers' comp. That's a requirement of state law, and it's not in our ordinance, so we need to move it in. Another one is child support. If you're not meeting your child support order, you should be denied your license, your business license. And so that's a requirement of NRS now that is not existing in our code. And so I've put it in. Again, just to talk about how complicated it's been is, say, for example, in 504, which is business licenses, there was a section about liquor at special events in 504.310. And so that had no business being in the general business license section. So I took it out, and we have a separate section now that is appropriate for special events. So some of the cleanup was just segregating the parts of the liquor ordinance that were in somehow misplaced into the business license, and I'm moving them back to where they are appropriately now in the right sections. So, again, this has been a very complicated process, and looking at things with a fresh eye all the time gets you kind of crazy. But hopefully we're getting through most of the issues. I think there are a couple of large ones that the board still needs to sort of weigh in on, but I think we have enough that we can make changes, and maybe on the idea of what the qualifications for a liquor license are, maybe we can bring in some alternatives for the board to look at, whether good moral character is required, their financial standing. think in other jurisdictions use suitability, and so we could present the board with some options maybe that make it a little easier to pick one. So on that, unless Stacy has something else to add, again, Pat provided you with the workflow chart, which I think is helpful and gives you an idea of what we're proposing.
And on general, a lot of those steps won't be there. We're not, because they're not privileged, you know,
right.
That eliminates the background criminal investigations. It's pretty much what we're doing right now, to be honest with you. It's just, like you say, cleaning up a lot of stuff. And I want to compliment Bob. I mean, I think he learned of 7 new ordinances when he went down and met with the repository that they heavily rely on. It probably has been one of the more difficult projects to tackle. I'm sure zoning was every bit as difficult, if not more. But I think we're getting close.
Yeah.
Okay.
And on that note, I would ask that you continue this matter.
Very good.
To the same 45-60-day amount that you wanted last time?
Yes. I think we can do them. We hope to be able to do them concurrently as we presented them all along.
Okay. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, Commissioner McGuffey?
You
know I'll give my hand slap if I don't.
Yeah. I move to continue the second reading of Ordinance 15-271 for hopefully the near future, say 30 to 25 days.
Second to motion. We moved in second to continue another second reading of Ordinance 15-271 sometime within 30 to 45 days. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to community development planning. This is item number 32. Discussion and possible action. Second reading of Ordinance number 16-272, an ordinance extending interim development regulations affecting Title 16 and 17 of the Story County Code by extending through August 31st, 2016, Title 16A, establishing minimum interim requirements for subdivision map approvals, and Title 17A by limiting master plan amendments for approvals of planned unit developments during the master plan approval process, providing for other properly related matters. The moratorium on subdivisions and planned unit developments will be in effect until the comprehensive update to the Story County Master Plan is adopted, or August the 31st, 2016, whichever comes first. Mr. Van Hagel.
Well, with that copious description and Austin's presentation during the first reading, then I just wanted to reference the update on the progress of the master plan earlier in this meeting today. Do you have any questions?
I don't. Mr. McGuffey.
There was some provisions in here stating well water usage, if I'm correct. For developers to have, there was concern about well water, groundwater.
To prove water rights?
Yeah.
Before the
septic systems, you had a clause about septic systems?
I don't think that's where we're going, Commissioner. These are on the larger plan unit development subdivisions. They're meant to avoid some of the challenges we have at the Highlands right now. For instance, if back in the day we would have had this, we would have required under our current advisory questions that were passed back in 2009, I think, or so, we had 2 advisory questions asking the voters of Story County if they wanted to have a provision in there that proves up water before they even begin to apply and bog down the process. This continues that approach.
but only until the August date when we hope to have the master plan in there. And those two items are integrated strongly in the master plan. It's, you know, we get developers in there that allude to the fact that they have water, but we want them to prove it based on the strength of the voter advisories from back in the day.
Okay, and so I see that this is just a temporary, it's written as a to enact a temporary developer regulations.
Yeah, we don't get.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's extending the temporary moratorium is to really help the county get the new master plan in place.
Is this an extension of what of an extension we already had in place?
Yes. Correct. Yes.
Okay. That was a. Okay. So you really feel that we can get it done by the end of August?
Yes. It is in the proofreading phase right now.
And we've kind of taken an approach, Commissioner McGuffey, because we're getting a lot of people now coming out of the woodwork. This has been a 7-year project.
Yeah.
And this thing has been on the road more times than, right, you know, my old Chevy has practically. And we've taken the approach, pretty much talk to the hand. If you're coming in this late with anything, yeah, you're too late.
Yeah, I agree.
We know the master plan, like most ordinances that we do, will require us to come back and do little tweaks here and there. And the good news is about a master plan is you only adopt it by resolution, so it's not an ordinance, which kind of astounds me. But you know, we know we're going to make some tweaks. We know we're going to have to work with some of the principal developers, but we're not going to derail this thing. Austin's committed. Jason's committed. The Planning Commission's committed.
Yeah, I know, and I appreciate all the work they're doing. They've been working hard on this.
Yeah, as a great.
This will be the second extension you've asked for?
Yes.
Yes. I think it's from the first of the year to July 1st, and then this one was from roughly
August. Okay.
Yeah, through the end of August. The schedule right now for the master plan is July 7th to be approved or adopted by the Planning Commission, August 2nd for adoption by the County Commission, and that leaves us the August 16th County Commission meeting as slack if we need it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any public comment? Hearing none. Commissioner McGuffey, look for you to move that we,
in conformance with the applicable federal, state, and county regulations and the recommendation for approval by staff, I recommend we approve ordinance number 16-272, creating interim development regulations, i.e. the moratorium on subdivision and planned unit developments, affecting Title 16 and 17 of the Story County Code by creating Title 16A, establishing minimum interim requirements for subdivision map approvals, and Title 17A by limiting master plan amendments for approvals of planned unit development during the master plan approval process and providing for the properly related matters.
Second
for other properly matters.
Second your motion. Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Moving along now, item number 33, discussion of possible action. Modified development agreement between Story County and the Reno Tahoe Industrial Center, LLC, February 1st, 2000, in order to approve the annexation of certain real property into the Reno Tahoe Industrial Center, including a portion of sections 34 and 35, T20N, R22E, MDM, parcel 2016-W2, as shown in the certain parcel map for Western 102 Ranch Incorporated and Western 102 Ranch Limited Partnership, recorded on February the 22nd, 2016, as file number 123567 in the official records of Story County, Nevada.
I'm going to take this one, Jason. I agreed we would do the Mutt and Jeff show, and I'm not sure
who's Mutt. I want to be Jeff. And I ask you, please don't get too complex with me, because the gentleman that sat right here for quite some time was the surveyor of record for TRI. When they sit here for as long as he would have sat here to finally get to this item today, the cost to his client would have been huge. So to give you a little bit of background on this is really simple. If in and around particularly Waltham Way, there are a number of parcels adjacent to TRI but not in TRI. One would assume they are. For instance, Barrett is not in TRI. Duraflex is not in TRI. Mars Pet Care is not in TRI. Mark Siegel, who is the principal developer of the Gateway Commerce Center, a beautiful property right on the corner, almost, if you will, of Waltham Way, Electric Avenue, not quite, but that National Rand is at. He wants to buy additional parcels behind him, some of which are in TRI and others of which are in the ownership of Western 102 Ranch. There's always slight problems with this, and in this case what happens, there are really two methodologies of valuation. TRI's property, and we're only talking land, we're not talking building, but TRI's property is worth more per square foot because of the entitlements and improvements that come built in with TRI, the access to water, sewer, access to roads. For the rest of these folks, it doesn't exist. Like Alcoa, for instance, the old Alcoa building, we'll be working with that once we finally get a developer, because part of it's in TRI, part of it isn't. The simplest of solutions is either get it all out of TRI or get it into TRI. And in this case, the preponderance of the parceling was already within TRI. These are just very small slivers that are strategically important to Mark's additional two buildings. And we wanted to, we approached Bob Sader and said, why don't you guys just add this? They already have water rights, you know, inherent with 102. They don't have to buy more water. And they've got access to the road, and it's Mark Siegel, and he's buying quite a bit of property from you. So Lance and Roger and Bob agreed. They've agreed to the annexation, so this is slightly increasing the size of TRI, which just makes it easier on the assessment values, and it also makes it easier on our public-private partnership auditing that we go through with Connie. So yeah, we recommend that you approve this.
The only problem I have with this is I didn't receive any kind of document signed by Mark Siegel saying that he wants this.
I'd have to check on the property, Jack. I don't know if he's acquired it yet. I'm going to hedge. I think it's TRI. And we do have Mark's verbal for whatever that's worth. I mean, he wants it all to be in the park. And had he been here today, we could certainly have him attest to that.
Yeah, I know.
I think he does own it.
Okay, if he's close
to it. I think he doesn't. I think he did, because they came in. I think when he came in and talked to Austin about it, he was surprised to find out that there was not in the TRI.
Okay. Then he's close
to
the owner.
And then he went to Roger. And
there's nothing here telling me that.
Yeah.
It's all.
Yeah. But, yeah.
That's your call.
Yeah, that's the problem. There's nothing here that's stating that.
I'm aware of that.
The owner of the property wants to do this.
Yeah, I can tell you he's told Austin, he's told me, he's told Bob Sader that he wants it annexed in because it's the easiest of answers for him. And actually it comes at a slight cost to him, because now he'll have to start paying the annual assessments on those portions that have been outside of the TRI boundaries.
I got a blank sheet that where he probably was signed and with a notary, but nothing here that tells me that that Mark Siegel wants to move forward with this.
Well, if it were not to move forward, then he would sign the document, right?
I mean, make your approval contingent on signing that, that's fine, but typically we try to streamline these projects and meet, although I can tell you there's so much soils work on this.
No,
there are probably 30 different types of soil, including diatomaceous earth on this property. So.
I think it's a CYA thing. To have something, we can approve it with, on a contingency that Mark Siegel supplies a letter of intent or whatever within, I don't know, 30 days. Or
we can certainly do that. Mark will be happy to.
Okay, the subject property is not owned by TRI, but its owner, Reno Britton One, has requested the TRI approve and consent the annexation. So.
That was written by...
Should we presume that, that this was signed by Robert Sater, who's the...
Yeah, that's Sater. Yeah, he's, he worked for TRI.
Yeah, and in essence, what's being asked, and I, we can do anything you want, but what Mark has done is appropriate, is he's asked TRI to annex it in, so it's all within the TRI boundaries, and then TRI has said okay and asked us to extend the boundaries of their development agreement.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Mark Siegel owns that property.
I don't think it'd be a big deal to ask for a letter.
No. Okay.
Okay.
So this is an action item, so I'll ask for any public comments. Hearing none? Okay. Do you want to go ahead and put this into a form of a motion then, Commissioner McGuffey?
Based upon the recommendation for approval by staff, I'll make a motion to approve the modification to the development agreement between Story County and Palo Reno Industrial Center, LLC, noted February 1st of 2000, year 2000, in order to approve the annexation of real property into the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, including a portion of sections 34 and 35, T20N, R22E, MDM, parcel 2016-W2, as shown in that certain parcel map for Western 102 Ranch Incorporated and Western 102 Ranch Limited Partnership, recorded on February 22, 2016, as file number 123567 in the official's records of Story County, Nevada, pending a letter from Mark Siegel stating his approval of this modification.
Okay, very good. I'll second your motion. So it's moved to second to approve this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We already heard item 34, so we're going to continue on now to items number 35. Possible action. Licensing board second readings.
You saved the best for last.
Ms. Buchanan.
Stacy Buchanan for the record. Thank you, Chairman. Per my June 20th letter, Story County Building Department has inspected and found that the following businesses meet requirements necessary to operate in the county. There are 22 total, two of which are in county, all the rest are out. Letter A, F&G Construction Limited, letter B, CLP Resources, Inc., C, Christensen Electric, Inc., D, Construction Development Services, E, Compagna Company, LLC, F, Atlas Copco Tools and Assembly Systems, LLC, G, Olson Electrical Services, H, Gregory P. Luth and Associates, I, E&M Electric and Machinery, Inc., J, M&M Construction, K, Lotus Automation USA, L, Call Commercial Interiors, M, Caldwell Tanks, Inc., N, Aspen Engineering, O, Western Landmark Enterprises, LLC, doing business as Reno Renovations, P, W&W Avco Steel, LLC, Q, Jacobs Engineering Group, Inc., R, Outsource, LLC, S, The Cider House, up at 420 South B Street, T, Western Single Ply, U, Tamarco, Contractor Specialties, and V, T, Yun Dean, doing business as Blue Buffalo, down on C Street.
All right.
Wait till next week. We'll have to have an intermission.
Any public comment on the second reading? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval.
Is that item A through S?
A through B.
A through B? Okay, I don't catch it here. Sorry, I'm a line off there. Okay. I'll make a motion to approve items A through B.
I'll second your motion. I move to second to approve all items on item 35, A through B. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Number 36, public comment.
We bored them out.
Seeing none, hearing none. Meeting's adjourned. See you on the 5th of July.